his belt and his words, all that his abuse had cost me, a sheltered, pitiful life. I thought of my mother, the sweet children she had raised almost entirely alone, the small life she had lived, her lifelong pain and suffering, her one shot at health, squandered, how her own daughter, blessed with the gift of healing, had never been able to heal her, and the undignified, excruciating, arbitrary way in which she had died. And then I thought of myself. Every exploitation, manipulation, blow, insult, everything that had shaped my childhood and these past few years. A life wasted in fear, hiding from what was outside, terrified of being alone, yet always feeling lonely. Betrayal from the only person who had shown me what anything else could feel like. A prophecy that promised my death. I finally had a profound understanding of my purpose in this world, and it was to die. I wailed and purged, sputtering the pain outward as it bled from my fingers, my heart, my mouth. Power shuddered through me, decimating, destroying, unending. I screamed my suffering into the skies and brought down a merciless hail of fire on the enemy soldiers. The world was too cruel. Nobody deserved to live to see another day. I would annihilate them all. I would.
You showed extraordinary bravery when you had no hope it would save you. What you call fear is indeed power, and you can wield it for good. I did not want to live in a world without you in it. You are a bright light, Arwen. I have always known what you are and loved you just the same.
I collapsed on the deck in a heap, sobbing and gasping for breath. 31. A cool compress sat on my forehead. The angry morning sun beat down on my shoulders and prickled my skin.
"There she is," said a soft, familiar voice. My eyes were heavy with sleep and sorrow. I blinked up at Mari's kind, somber face, her mass of red curls looming above me. I sat up slowly, head pounding, and realized we were still on the deck of the ship. By the sun's place in the sky, I guessed I had been out for hours. I turned to look at the sea, letting the salt spray across my face. Peridot was long behind us. There was no land for miles. I couldn't even think of it. What I had done. What I had lost.
"Nobody is following us," I said instead.
"After your episode,"
she paused as if trying to get her wording right,
"there was nobody left to follow us. None of King Ravenwood's witches from the capital are here, so I found a spell to cloak the ship. When they gather their armies back together, at least we'll be untraceable."
I nodded, numb. I was not going to ask about Kane, whether he was on this ship or...
"So,"
she said, removing the cool compress and soaking it again.
"You're a fairy. You could have told me, you know."
I could hear the hurt in her voice.
She didn't know.
I looked up, squinting into direct sunlight. The voice belonged to Ryder, who had Lee by the hand. She was stone-faced. I had never seen her expression so cold.
"How are you a true fae, and neither of us are? We had the same mother," he asked. He, too, was graver than I had ever seen him before.
That endless light that shone inside him, regardless of circumstance, was gone.
"I don't know," I said. It came out like a plea.
I stood up with Mari's help and walked toward him steadily. When I knew neither would flinch, I wrapped them in a hug. We stayed like that for a long while. Even though we had different fathers, I had never felt like they were my half-siblings. I had never known my father, and my mother had never spoken of him in my childhood. At last,
I had pried it out of her just 2 years ago. She told me she had met a man from another kingdom, which one she couldn't recall, in a tavern outside of Abington. She was drowning her sorrows over the recent loss of her own mother, and he had lifted her spirits and taken her dancing. The next morning, she woke up in his cottage, and he was gone. She never saw him again. I hated to think of my father that way, so I didn't think of him much at all. Even as I racked my brain, I knew it wasn't possible that the man could have been responsible for what I was. I was the last full-blooded Fae. Both my parents had to be full-blooded Fae, which meant either my mother had hidden her Fae nature from us our whole lives, or she wasn't really my mother. My siblings were now my only living family, the closest people I had left, and odds were I wasn't related to either of them at all. That, coupled with the gaping hole deep in my heart at the loss of my mother, and the realization that she wasn't really the woman who had given birth to me, was enough to break whatever spirit I had left. Despite our embrace, I had never felt so far away from them, and we had just spent months apart. I hated what I now knew I was, so foreign and removed, I hardly felt like myself. But most of all, I hated Cain. I wasn't sure where he was. I told myself I didn't care if he had survived the battle with his father. Why should I? I pulled away from my siblings and looked out across the too bright deck. A few soldiers were tending to the wounded, but it seemed most everyone else had gone below. The stomps of petite footsteps from the captain's quarters echoed across the deck, breaking me from my somber thoughts.
Ghastly cowards, that's what we are.
I spun to see Amelia, Eric's, Griffin, and Barney make their way onto the deck in succession. No Cain. I couldn't tell if it was grief or fear or relief that twisted my stomach. Each of their gazes lingered on me. Amelia's as cold as ice, King Eric's conveying vague interest, Barney's sympathetic, Griffin's unreadable, as always. A flicker of shame sparked deep in my chest at their prying eyes, but I was too numb, too exhausted to really feel it.
Amelia, we had no choice.
King Eric's turned back to his daughter.
We had to survive.
Amelia whirled to face him.
We left our people to suffer.
She practically spat the words.
We got some out on the other ships.
I got them out. You just ran like a, more importantly, he enunciated right over her. We lived to fight another day.
And where will we go now? Just keep running? She said, bitterness coating her voice.
King Eric's looked to Griffin, but he didn't respond. Instead, Griffin turned to the bow of the ship. Like a dark and vengeful demon of death, Cain stepped out from the shadows.
We sail for the kingdom of Citrine.
He was alive. I thought I heard my heart crack open. He looked wrecked. Gashes covered his arms and neck. One eye was blackened and sealed shut, and his lip was split. A chest wound was haphazardly wrapped under his open, billowing shirt, but bright red blood was seeping through the makeshift bandages. Cain's focus landed on me immediately. His eyes flickered with concern. I pulled my gaze from his and settled it on the briny, bottomless water across from me.
We have no way of sending ravens to let them know we are coming, King Ravenwood.
Eric said to him,
we'll just have to hope they welcome us with open arms.
A dark laugh barked out of Griffin at the sentiment.
They won't.
I know, Cain said with lethal calm.
He passed the group of them and approached me tentatively. When I couldn't avoid his eyes anymore, I turned to him.
How are you, Bird?
His face was a mask of regret, but his voice was like a spirit, for an instant relieving, even pleasurable, before turning bitter on my tongue.
Don't speak to me, I said. Even if this wasn't all his fault, I was so emotionally destroyed it had to fall on someone. He seemed more deserving than most. Ryder stepped in front of me protectively, arms folded.
Give us a moment, Ryder.
Kane really did look brutal. Ryder looked to me, and I shook my head vehemently. I didn't want to be anywhere near the man.
I don't think so, Your Majesty,
Ryder said, with as much courtesy as he could muster. Kane paused, then nodded his understanding.
I am so sorry for your loss,
Kane said to all three of us. Lee wouldn't even look him in the eye. He walked toward the left side of the deck. I looked at Ryder and then to Mari. Neither met my eyes. I knew what they were thinking. I had to talk to him eventually. The ship was only so big.
Let's go inside. I need some food, Mari said.
Ryder followed her, looking back at me. I kissed Lee on the head and pulled together what little strength I had left. I'll be right behind you. Griffin, Eryx, Amelia, and the rest of the guards and soldiers on deck had moved to the bow of the ship to continue their argument. Maybe they sensed the onslaught of tension between Kane and me and didn't want to be anywhere near us. I wouldn't blame them. Besides a few stragglers, Kane and I were the only two left on this side. I met him where he stood, the wind battering his hair. He was closing his eyes to the sun. Sensing my presence, he turned to me, but I could only stare at the ocean below us. The briny smell of kelp and salt fit my stormy mood. We stood in silence, listening to the waves crash against the ship for far too long. I'm the last full-blooded Fae, I stated. He stilled, but answered me.
Yes.
My heart thumped violently. I knew it was true, but it still shook my very bones to hear him say it. Griffin is Fae, too.
He is.
My cheeks burned.
Griffin, Doggin, Amelia.
How many had known what I was before I did? And you're both Fae that can shift, I said.
You're the dragon that flew me to Shadowhold that first night?
Yes, he said, and faced the churning sea. And the blade of the sun? From the prophecy? He turned toward me, his eyes awash with, was it misery? Searing regret? But he hid it as quickly as I had noticed and tensed his jaw.
It's what Halden wanted that had already been stolen from my vault years ago. The only weapon that can kill Lazarus when wielded by you.
He swallowed hard.
He likely came to Shadowhold looking to murder Fae defectors, but somehow heard the blade was in my possession. Truth is, it could be anywhere.
My heartbeat pounded in my ears. I thought it was in my heart. That's what the prophecy said.
Most scholars I've consulted think that's not to be interpreted literally. But let's not discuss it with Amelia. She's all too game to cut you open and check.
The look in his eyes was murderous, and I could tell he wasn't joking. So I'm a true Fae, like you said. The words still felt insane to me. How does a halfling like you have light?
I'm not a halfling. Halflings are just mortals with trace ancestral amounts of Fae lineage. It's barely noticeable if you don't know what to look for. Often they're strikingly beautiful, very strong, or live unnaturally long lives. There are only two kinds of fairies. Fae, Griffin, myself, all the soldiers, all those trapped in the Fae realm. We all have some mortal lineage from millennia of crossbreeding. The other kind are true Fae, or full-blooded Fae. Only you and Lazarus.
But how? I was born in Abington, my mother was mortal. I was babbling. My siblings are all...
We aren't sure.
Horror struck me. Could you and I be related?
A grim smile crossed his face. No, Bird. You were born long after the last full-blooded Fae female passed on. Your birth is, well, it's a miracle. One even my father doesn't understand.
So Haldin, his mission wasn't just to hunt down any Fae. He had been looking for
you, yes. The Fae from the prophecy. Horror struck me like a slap.
Haldin. Haldin.
He would have killed me in those stables.
Cain stepped closer, and I braced myself.
Arwen, I am so, so sorry. For everything. All that I kept from you. For letting him find you. The pained grimace on his face told me what he knew could have happened on the beach had he not shifted in time.
My lungs tightened. The air trapped inside of them burned.
I reminded myself to exhale. Maybe I should have known all along, I said. I never understood my abilities, or why they would dissipate after I used too much. I thought of the night I couldn't heal myself after helping the Chimera.
Dagon, did you ask him to train me?
As a young man, he was my Kingsguard for many years in the Fae realm, until the rebellion. When we came to Onyx, he retired. But there is nobody better on the continent to train you, both with your sword and your light.
The way Dagon had known about my abilities, and where I could draw power from, he too had lied to me. Anger and humiliation and hopelessness warred inside me. How had I been so blind all along? Amelia had been right. I had been such a fool.
You told me you had never lied to me. You promised you had told me everything. I couldn't help turning to face him. I studied his slate gray eyes as they welled with anguish.
I deserved to know, Cain.
He looked a moment away from breaking. He reached for me, but thought better of it, and tucked his hand back into his pocket. I couldn't risk anyone else knowing, anyone having another reason to hurt you. Lazarus's entire army has been looking for the last full-blooded Fae who could spell his death for nearly a century.
Bullshit. You needed to use me as a weapon. You knew if you told me all of this, what defeating Lazarus meant for me, for my...
I swallowed.
My fate? That I would never help you achieve your vengeance.
The word was bitter on my tongue. Cain had the audacity to look shaken, but said nothing. Hatred funneled through me. He would not see me cry. I tucked my shaking hands into fists and turned away.
How long did you know what I was before I did?
I asked, my voice rough and low. He ran a hand through his hair. Bert realized you were who we had been looking for the night you healed Barney. When I flew you to my keep, there was a light in you that couldn't be anything but Fae. I remembered the ride, the strange connection I had felt with him in his dragon form. For almost 100 years, I have woken up each morning with one thought, just one. Find the last full-blooded Fae. Fulfill the prophecy. Kill my father. I lost the people who meant the most to me at his hand. So did Dagon and Griffin. The day we rallied against him, I let them down, and we all suffered for it.
My heart skipped 2 beats. Dagon's family? Lazarus was the one who killed them?
If I don't finish what we started, none of their sacrifices are worth anything. Still to this day, millions live enslaved in a wasteland because of him. You thought you knew what a cruel king looked like, but you have no idea, Arwen. None. Every mortal on this continent will die a senseless death if he isn't stopped. And yet, even knowing all of that, that day we raced.
A sorrowful smile crossed his face.
I was so enchanted by you. I had never met anyone like you. The night you were attacked,
I faced him, unable to look away any longer.
I knew I couldn't go through with it. Not even for the good of all of Evendel.
I brought you and your family here to live the rest of your lives in safety.
My heart was shattering.
Do you hear me?
Unable to hold himself back a minute longer, Kane finally reached a frantic hand toward me.
I was willing to sacrifice the entire world to keep you alive.
Don't touch me.
I pulled away and turned back to the relentless ocean beneath us. Despite my promise to myself, a single tear slipped down my cheek.
I tried to take the choice away from you, and for that, I am sorry. But I will die before I let him have you. You have to know that.
Power rippled off him in waves at his oath. But I wasn't afraid of him. I was afraid of myself. I was afraid to die, afraid to live, afraid of the power that roiled inside me. A thick fog of despair invaded every sense, suffocating me, trapping me within this new reality. Because of him, I could have lived my whole life and never known of my fate. I wouldn't have had to die. But now, I knew I was the only one who could kill Lazarus, and if he died, I would as well. It was all information I could have gone my whole life without. And now, there was no other choice. I will help you end this war. We can find the blade of the sun, and I'll plunge it through his heart. We will save all of the people Lazarus intends to kill, save the Fey realm, avenge those you lost, Dagon, Griffin, everyone. We'll finish what you started, Kane.
No,
he said, his voice breaking.
I refuse to lose you. It's not your choice. Arwen,
you've made enough choices for me. A bluster blew his hair across his chiseled face, vulnerable in a way I had never seen before. I almost folded into him. Almost. But instead, I stepped back and took a deep breath of salt water and rain-soaked air. Maybe before I would have caved, forgiven you out of fear of being alone, done whatever you told me I should, I would have felt that I needed you, especially knowing what horrors were to come. But now, you lied to me, used me. I steeled myself. I can't be with you like that, Kane. Not anymore.
Please,
he said. It was almost a whisper. I shook my head. I was breaking, twisting apart. My mother was gone. The man it didn't matter now. He wiped his eyes.
As you wish.
And with that, he crossed the deck and slipped below to the galley. I turned my attention back to the waves ahead of me. The rough blue water was a tempo I couldn't follow, chaotic and choppy, swaying in a strange dance under the ship's bow. The sight was more beautiful than I had realized. I had been wrong before. It was not a cruel world. Or it was, but it was also wonderful. I had seen more beauty, joy, and hope in the past few months than I'd thought existed. And there was so much more out there. There were so many people, so much love, and so much possibility. I couldn't let it be snuffed out by one man, Fey or otherwise. I could do this for Evendel, for my family, for Mari, for all the innocent Fey and mortals alike. I could find this blade, fight this battle alongside the man who had thoroughly shattered my heart. I could be strong. It was a world I had to save, even if I wouldn't live to see it.
Keep listening for an exclusive look at Kane and Arwen's first meeting from his perspective.
Kane, 5 months earlier. I hated this kingdom, every inch of it. Saccharine nutmeg coated my tongue and the back of my throat every time I inhaled. There was too much corn, too many fallen bronze leaves crunching underfoot. The taverns here only served one ale, a stout brewed with apple and cinnamon that was so sweet it made your teeth ache. My fangs prickled along my jaw at the thought. I'd wanted to leave the Amber Kingdom hours ago, but Bert had insisted on getting Barney medical assistance in the nearby town of Abington, and since he'd just lost his general, I gave him an hour. It was my fault our men were being hunted in the first place. When my father's face materialized in my mind, I dove downward, closer to the autumn trees below, wings outstretched against the early evening air, and tried to let the wind whistling against my scales calm the boiling in my blood. I knew it was a waste of light to shift like this. I wasn't flying the battalion back to my kingdom for another hour, possibly longer if Bert found an infirmary for Barney. But seeing yet another murdered member of my army spurred more fury, more pent-up restlessness inside me than I knew how to handle. Not long now. I just need the girl. The mantra wasn't doing much to soothe me these days, perhaps because I'd been saying it for 20 years, ever since the night of the fallen star. The moment replayed in my mind's eye as clear as if I'd seen it through a looking glass. 2 decades ago, I'd shot out of a deep sleep like a man possessed, sweating and gasping, clutching at my chest like my heart had been broken in two. I staggered out onto the balcony, icy air cutting at my face, just in time to see it. A lustrous, bright white star descending behind the mountains, like a drop of iridescent paint slipping down a night-black canvas. The words of the prophecy had rung through my still sleep-addled mind. The fallen star will mean war has once again begun. I'd been like an eager child then, naive as I waited impatiently for the promise of blood and battle. For the last full-blooded Fae, expecting her to show up at my castle gates any minute. Here I am, sacrifice me. But nothing had happened. Just an inexplicable feeling I was saddled with, that something infinitesimal had shifted within the fabric of our world. And while we waited 20 years for some fated Fae girl, I was forced to investigate the deaths of more and more of my high-ranking officers, each one killed by a mercenary sent by my father. To kill me. To taunt me. To distract me. I wasn't sure. Tonight's executioner had been especially monstrous. That bastard must have shifted into something with horns, given the gaping holes that perforated the murdered general's lungs and throat. Perhaps claws, too. Barney's gut was practically shredded. The flash of his entrails spilling onto the damp amber soil turned my own stomach. Barney was a good man. I almost cared. And speaking of, at the sight of my battalion walking through the glade below, I plunged downward. Cool evening air stung my snout as I sailed before landing with ease. The thud of my weight on the ground sent dirt and debris up in puffs around me like smoke. And when the dust settled, there she was, like a glowing ember in the dark, beckoning to me. Pale moonlight dripped along her jaw and delicate nose, her full, round lips, her worried brow and tangled chestnut hair. Wide olive eyes fell to mine, shining and unreadable, pulling me toward her as if, "Healed the oaf," Lieutenant Bert said, low but not a whisper. Liquored breath stung my nostrils and pulled my attention from the girl's sorrowful face. Beside us, soldiers heaved a half-conscious Barney onto my back. His gut had been wrapped in bandages, seeping with red like wine through a tablecloth. "Think he'll be fine?" My lips curled into a snarl. The lieutenant was a decent leader and a skilled swordsman, but gods, I hated the man. He was a sniveling suck-up. But I have something even better for you, my king. I've never seen such healing. What she did for Barney, it wasn't witch magic. It poured from her fingers like nectar. I think she might be what you've been looking for. As the rest of the men climbed atop my outstretched wings, I studied the girl once more. Graceful face, dainty collarbone and shoulders, flushed cheeks. Actually, upon closer inspection, she looked awful. Still so, so beautiful, of course. Beauty such as hers couldn't be marred by fear or dirt or blood. But she was covered in all three from head to toe. And she wasn't wearing much. Perhaps she was a courtesan. I wouldn't have been surprised. I was sure amber men would pay buckets of coin to have their way with her. Regardless of the state she was in, the truth was painfully obvious, so obvious it nearly knocked the breath from my lungs. Most wouldn't have been able to identify a full-blooded fae off appearance alone, but having grown up with a full-blooded father, it was like seeing a rose among weeds. The light inside her was nearly glowing. She could have lit up the entire clearing if she had wanted to. I almost wept with relief. After all this time, she was real. And she was here. And she was digging her feet into the ground, whimpering against her restraints and quivering in fear. Oh, from me. She was afraid of me.
It's all right. The beast won't hurt you, Barney said from my back, still clutching at his wrapped wound.
His words didn't seem to calm the girl. As she neared me, still whining and resisting like an animal, I tried to look slightly less menacing. I wasn't sure why. I enjoyed being menacing. It was one of the many perks of my dragon form, the looks on people's faces, the way they ran and hid. At least it was an improvement on their bowing. More fitting for a beast, as Barney said. Finally, her swollen red eyes caught mine, and in them, more grief than I'd seen in years. Glistening doe eyes like pools of melancholy. They reminded me of the woods outside the palace I grew up in. So much so I could almost smell my mother's perfume that filled the halls. The feeling was uncanny. And over in an instant as she climbed onto my back.
Don't try anything smart, girl.
I rolled my eyes at the soldier. It wasn't as if she could escape into the clouds.
Not really anywhere for me to go, she snipped.
I stifled a laugh. And then everyone was aboard and I was off, bounding into the night sky, ready to get home. It had been a long night and I knew. Her touch almost sent me plummeting into the dirt thousands of feet below us. Despite my enormous dragon form and the near dozen men piled atop of me, I could feel the singular touch of her fingers on my spine like a white-hot brand. Her dainty fingertips along my back. The sensation shot all the way down into my claws. And her pulse. I could feel it racing through my scales, like a captured sparrow in a child's sweaty palms, heart pattering so fast its whole body shook with the effort of staying upright. I tried, in vain, to wriggle free from her grip. It was too personal, feeling her touch and hearing her breathing and knowing the rhythm of her fear. She was most definitely the full-blooded fae girl from the prophecy. She couldn't be anything else. It was the only way to explain the bizarre physical reaction I was having to being around her. I needed a drink.
You're joking.
I am not. She's here, in the castle.
After all this time.
Griffin shook his head and threw the small leather ball for Acorn, who scampered across the study on all fours, puncturing it between his sharp teeth before it rolled under a mahogany bookcase. As the air hissed out of the ball, his shoulders fell in remorse, his owl-like wings knocking clumsily against the shelves. I fought a grin. He wasn't a typical pet, and certainly not fit for a mortal king, but the bony, frightful Strix had been mine since boyhood, and the gods themselves couldn't bring me to part with him. Acorn trotted the deflated ball back to Griffin with an eager squawk. What was she doing in Amber? He asked, tossing the flaccid ball higher this time. I have no idea, I mused, downing the rest of my glass and leaning back into the cushions of my velvet chair. The whiskey burned my throat and soothed my racing mind. Meanwhile, we just captured a man who hides coin for one of Rose's largest criminal rings. They're thieves and arms salesmen. If the Blade of the Sun is being sold anywhere on this side of the continent, he'll know about it. The Blade of the Sun contained unimaginable power when harnessed by Fae, but it was no more than a hunk of metal in the hands of a mortal, even a halfling. And yet, foolish, greedy men had sought it for centuries, unaware that they could never truly wield the thing. And one of those very fools was in my dungeon as we spoke. Hope unfurled in my gut. I was having quite the night. Excellent. Let's get him on the rack. Griffin's brow furrowed as he lounged back into the charcoal couch, ignoring Acorn as he nudged the ball forward. He'll die before we get him to talk. The man's run the crime capital of the continent for 15 years. He's trained to withstand everything but death. I set the icy mug down and ran a hand over my face in thought. It wasn't ideal, but I could work with it. I'd just have to get the felon to open up some other way. Maybe to appear. A fellow prisoner. Someone he could commiserate with. Brag to. They always wanted to brag. Perhaps we could bribe some other asshole chained up in our dungeon to ask the right questions and report back. But the girl, she would be down there. I'll just go talk to him myself. Griffin cocked his head at me as I moved through the study door into my quarters, pulling off my silver rings and grabbing an old hunting fur from the depths of my wardrobe. Well, not myself, exactly, I called back toward him. Back in a bit. I was off before he could object, barreling into the hallway, past my guards and down the stone steps of my keep. It was late and the castle was silent, save for a few guards who bowed with each opened door. A real lead on the Blade, the last full-blooded Fae in my possession, and all I could think of was seeing her again. Just getting one more look at her. It was the thrill of finally finding her after all these years, of knowing I would finally end my father's life and free all of Lumera. It had to be. My king! The young guard on duty outside the dungeon door greeted me with a reverent bow. Not tonight, Tool. I'm just another prisoner this evening. Got it? Sure, Your Majesty. I understand, of course. Tool's steadfast nod melted into a wince. But I actually do not understand. I stifled a sigh. I needed to get down there. She was likely minutes away, if not locked inside already. Which cell holds the man Griffin brought in from Rose? 17, my king. And is cell 16 open? Yes, but good. Now, force me down there and throw me in. I didn't have time for Tool's confusion. My king, now! When venom crept into my voice, Tool did as I said, and we made our way down the spiral stairs. The dungeon's air was so thick I could taste the must and mildew. Rot in there, you piece of filth! Tool threw me into the cell with theatrical flair. I appreciated the commitment, despite his wooden performance. Tool snuck me an eager smile on his way back through the passageway, and I tried not to grimace. The cell wasn't terrible. Frankly, the gray stone, dim lantern light, and drip of murky water fit my dark, damp soul quite nicely. Griffin would have mocked me for my self-pity, but it was true. I belonged somewhere just like this. I even appreciated the spider's fine work in the corner, its web like dainty, macabre decor. I scanned the passage. No Fae girl, not yet, at least. But in the cell next to me was the man from Rose, snoring in a lump in the corner. Perhaps I could find a pebble to chuck at him. No, wait, I can't go in there. Ah, right on time. I leaned forward to peer out into the shadowy corridor. I'm not going to harm you. It's just a place to lay your head until the lieutenant decides what to do with you. Barney's voice. I just can't be locked in. Please, where do the healers stay? A laugh slipped out of me.
The enchanting fae was a bit entitled. Vulgar hoots and hollers filled the dungeon, bouncing off the walls and floor as Barney walked her through and tossed the girl unceremoniously into the cell next to mine.
"Show me your tits, sweetheart. I've been down here for ages. Spread them legs for me, girl."
Sick satisfaction worked its way through me, knowing I had chained these animals up and they wouldn't see daylight again.
"Wait!"
the girl yelled after Barney, sobbing and panting. She was being a little dramatic. How old was she? 20, if the fallen star had indicated her birth. She sank down in the corner and brought her knees to her chest, shaking in earnest, her breaths coming in uneven bursts. What was wrong with her? Surely she had to have some power she could use. In fact, I was surprised she hadn't used her light yet. For the last full-blooded fae, she wasn't putting up much of a fight at all. Perhaps she didn't know of her own power. Of the prophecy, of her fae origins. It wasn't as if the Amber Kingdom had a robust fae population to educate her. The race was practically non-existent here in Evendell. I let my head fall back against the stone behind me. If that was the case, how was I going to get her to fight for us? How would I tell her she was destined to die? The girl's strangled, muffled gasps rang through my cell. She really wasn't breathing now. I peered closer. It seemed like she was panicking, like my brother Yale used to. Doggin used to soothe him through deep breathing, but I preferred another way. All Yale ever really needed was a distraction to take his mind off his body and focus on something else. But that was unrelated. I wasn't going to help her. She was just anxious. She'd be fine. It wasn't the right time. I only had one shot at convincing her to fight Lazarus. I had to position myself and our plan flawlessly, and I needed to get information out of the slumbering halfwit in the other cell. That was more important. I had only wanted to observe the girl. I wasn't going to talk to her, regardless of how miserable she looked, how hard it was for her to breathe, how many tears were splattering on the ground beneath her, how rushed her breaths sounded, how scared, how agonizingly frightened. Don't talk to her. Don't talk to her. Don't.
Bleeding stones,
she cursed under her breath. Quite the mouth on you, I hummed. Damn it. The girl snapped her head up, chocolatey brown hair falling over her face and sticking to her tear-streaked cheeks. She was still inhaling air as if paid by the breath, but now she also looked embarrassed.
Sorry,
she muttered. It's just a little dramatic, don't you think? What are you doing? Leave her alone. Her brows knit inward and she dropped the hand that was pressed firmly to her chest as if to slow her beating heart.
I said I was sorry. What more do you want?
A laugh that was more surprise than anything else tripped out of me and I leaned forward, intrigued. So, the little hummingbird had claws. Some peace and quiet from your weeping would be nice.
I'm done now,
she conceded, drawing in a long, slow breath and dropping her head back against the damp stone.
It's not every day you get imprisoned.
She snapped her head up.
Or maybe it is for you, but not for me.
The distraction was working. Good. It was a good deed to help the Fae girl, a payment for all those she would help with her sacrifice, the least I could do, truly. I'm just saying, some of us are trying to get some sleep around here. Your theatrics and heaving bosom aren't going to change your situation. I paused, debating the next words that played at my lips. Though the latter is nice to look at.
You're disgusting,
she breathed, and I swallowed a smirk. Someone's feeling brave with these bars between us.
Not really, just honest.
Her panic seemed to have subsided. She had wiped her tears with the back of her hand. The air was flowing slowly in and out through her nose. I just needed a better look, to be sure. I rose and felt my stiff bones creak, stretching my hands above my head and nearly scraping the mold from the ceiling. My earlier sentiments about the comfort of the cells had been incorrect. Now, I felt like a chicken in a coop. Walking toward the iron bars that sprouted between our cells, I peered down at the Fey girl. She was very small from this angle, fragile, bony. How would a woman like this defeat my father? It didn't seem possible. I leaned an arm onto the bars and examined her bruised shins and bare feet.
"Are you trying to scare me?" she asked quietly.
"Quite literally the opposite."
"Something like that?"
"Well, you don't. Scare me, that is."
"Such a brave bird," I hummed, and I believed her. Courage might be the only weapon she could wield against him.
"Good to hear. Perhaps now I can sleep."
That would be tomorrow's problem. Tonight, the girl would be fine, and I was free to play ally to the thug from Rose. I'd be out of this cell in...
"Your cruelty is a bit cliché."
Why was she so bold? She was practically studying me now. Unable to help myself, I dropped down to a crouch to get a better look at her, too. Her wide olive eyes, framed by long, fanned-out lashes, poured over mine. My lips, my chin. Heat rose in my blood.
"Why? Because I'm imprisoned?" I asked.
"What?"
I fought a smile as her cheeks turned pink.
"The cliché, as you said."
"Yes. Cruel, dark prisoner," she shrugged. "It's done to death."
"You wound me," I mocked.
But she was in here too, was she not?
"Couldn't I say the same of you?"
The most adorable, tiny, frustrated pinch furrowed between her brows, but she remained silent. Perhaps she didn't like the fact that despite her assumptions about me, we were locked in the same dungeon. She was a bit naive, this girl. What was ahead of her? Bravery aside, she'd need to be savvier.
"You'll have to buck up a bit, bird. You're in Onyx now. It's not all mud-colored hair, ruddy cheeks, and squash farmers. Bastards like me are the least of your concern."
"How do you know I'm from Amber?"
Shit.
Maybe her farm clothes would give her away. I scanned down her body and remembered how nearly bare she was. Dirtied white camisole splattered in Barney's blood, long wool skirt. The girl folded her arms across her chest in modesty, shame coating her cheeks.
Shame?
Was she feeling modest? Perhaps she wasn't a courtesan at all, in which case. I clenched my jaw against the irrational anger.
"What happened to the rest of your clothing?"
She swallowed hard.
"It's a long story."
The thought of anyone abusing this girl was suddenly very upsetting.
"Very. I've got time."
"I had to use my blouse to help someone, that's all."
When she shivered and little pebbles broke out across her bare arms, I couldn't help myself. "Are you cold?" What was I, her mother?
"Yes,"
she said honestly.
"You aren't."
"I must be used to it. Here."
I pulled off the hunting cloak and folded it through the bars between us. Her eyes widened, and I added hastily, "I can't listen to your teeth chattering a minute longer. It's grating on the nerves."
She took the fur with no snark, no bite, and wrapped it around herself like it was the single nicest item she had ever owned.
The girl's eyes nearly rolled back in her head from the warmth as she murmured,
"Thank you."
The garment was two sizes too big for her, but she snuggled into it as if it were made for her. She looked comfortable, cozy, as if all the horrors that had delivered her, bloody and bruised, to Bert this evening, and all the horrors that followed, from the back of a spiked beast to the confines of a cell, were manageable, as long as she could just be warm, safe. And the feeling brewing in my chest at such a sight. Oh, gods. I was fucked.
Here's a sneak peek of A Promise of Peridot, the next book in the Sacred Stones trilogy. Arwen.
I'm going to be sick again, warned Ryder, as he hung his head over the wet steel edge of the boat. Angry droplets of rain pelted us both as I rubbed soothing circles into the damp fabric clinging to his back. I'm here, I said, as I tried to send light into his knotted stomach. I waited and waited some more until I couldn't help but tense my fingers against the emptiness I felt where my power should have been, gritting my teeth against the void. Still nothing. Ryder retched into the churning sea below us. For the last 10 days, following the Battle of Siren's Bay, I had healed the entire ship of all their battle wounds without my power. The injuries inflicted by Lazarus's army, burns singed, and gashes slashed by light and fey weapons, were more damaging to the Onyx and Peridot soldiers than any mortal steel. It had been the most taxing work I'd ever done. And all the while, elbow deep in bandages and sickly, fevered sweat, I tried to grieve. We had held a small, makeshift funeral for her, the woman I had always thought was my mother. The unscathed soldiers aboard lowered her body into the churning sea beneath us, and I had said a few words, all of which felt flat and foreign in my mouth. Mari sung a hymn. Ryder cried. Lee didn't look at any of us, and then slunk into our cabin below decks before we even finished. It had been awful. Kane had asked if he could join us. I believe his words were, I'd like to be there for you, if you'll let me. As if his presence might have somehow made me feel better, instead of infinitely, infinitely worse. I hadn't wanted him anywhere near my family, or what had been left of them. Then, the storm came. A thunderous assault of rain, with waves that sloshed against the ship like battering rams. It raged and raged, without letting up our entire journey. Each day, within minutes of stepping out onto the deck for a reprieve from stale cabin air, I was soaked in frigid, briny seawater. Yesterday, the captain had rationed the ship's coal, so now there was no hot water. Already, I couldn't stomach any more lukewarm porridge. I looked down at my fingers on Ryder's back. They were eternally pruned, like little sun-baked raisins. He heaved again, and down the bow a couple feet, a Peridot woman in a thick wool cloak followed suit. Though I was lucky not to suffer from seasickness, the same couldn't be said for the rest of the passengers. The stomach-turning sounds of retching echoed at all hours of the day and night. I offered care to whomever I could, but with diminished light, there wasn't much to do. I hadn't offered any help to Kane, though. I'd watched him climb a rickety set of stairs with ease, a single day after being pierced through the chest by a spear of ice. He'd scaled them two at a time, nimble, strong, lively even. And yet, he had needed me to heal him so critically that day in the Shadowhold infirmary? All lies. More and more lies. My head swam with them. I waited for the instinctual rush of fear to ripple through me when I thought of the fate he'd kept for me all those months. The prophecy that foretold my death at Cain's own father's hands. But I felt nothing. I had felt nothing for days now. After a lifetime of too much fear and tears and worry, now I couldn't muster anything at all. With one final dry heave, Ryder slumped down against the bow, his forehead dented by the metal, and sucked in a deep breath. I think that's the last of it. There's nothing left in my stomach to vomit up. When he stood, his blue eyes were watery from exertion and rain. I frowned, a lovely mental image. His answering smile was weak. But I had drifted back to another time in my life, a memory of a slow autumn evening, silent save for the sounds of wind rustling among the weeds outside our house. I'd been sick after eating something rotten, Powell's leave no scrap behind mentality at work. And like Ryder and me on this deck, my mother had rubbed my back in steady sweeps, calming me as I purged. I could have healed myself, but chose not to. I liked how it felt to have her comfort me. I liked her hand on my shoulder, her quieting words. Lee had been born recently, and I think both Ryder and I missed Mother's attention. It was such a selfish, childish thing to do, to retch for an hour rather than heal my own illness, to not use the power I was lucky enough to have, just to keep her by my side in the chilly evening air, away from her new baby, her husband, and her son, to keep her with me. But it felt so good to be cared for. And now, I fell asleep every night, wondering who the woman even was. Had she found me on the street one day? Had someone forced her to raise me? And if so, where in the world were my real parents? If they were Fae, they were likely living in another realm, a melting world of parched earth and ash governed by a tyrant. Feeling any better? My eyes landed on Mari, wandering over wrapped in a thick fur cloak. She'd raided the ship on our first night and somehow found the most fashionable pieces aboard. But even the elegant pelt couldn't hide the way her copper hair clung in wet ringlets to her face, or the icy drops that showered her nose and near-blue lips. At the sight of Mari, Ryder stood 2 inches taller and pulled his hands from the bow to fold them confidently across his chest. Right as this rain, barely even sick. He nodded toward the woman still heaving down the deck. It's all these other folk I feel sorry for. He vomited the entire contents of his stomach out, and then some, I said to her. Ryder glared at me, and Mari gave him a compassionate frown. Sorry to hear it. This storm is unrelenting. Yeah, well, we sailed over another swell, and Ryder turned pale, clutching at his stomach. I am going to go talk to someone about that, right now. Then he dashed for the other end of the ship and out of eyesight. Mari lifted a brow at me. Talk to someone about the storm? I shook my head. He's too proud. I think it's sweet that he's embarrassed. Here. She pulled a small bronze vial from her skirts. Give him this. It's steel of the stomach. Another potion? Isn't that used for working in a mortuary? After I'd read the book on Evendel Flora from the Peridot Library twice, I had started working through Mari's grimoires out of sheer boredom. She didn't have much use for them anymore, anyway, not now that she had the amulet. Though Mari's mother had been a witch, she died in childbirth, so Mari never learned to wield her magic properly. It wasn't until she stole a necklace that belonged to Briar Creighton, the supposed most powerful witch of all time, that she was able to harness her power, and quite a bit of it. Now she did magic whenever and however she pleased, and the amulet never left her neck. Mari shrugged, pawing absently at the violet charm as it hung below her collarbone. I figured it might help him. It was easy to brew. Kane had told me back at Siren's Cove that the amulet was merely a trinket. Mari wasn't actually pulling any power from Briar or her lineage. All the magic she harnessed with such ease these days was her own. Every time I tried to tell her the truth, I found a well of apathy where my ethics used to be. I didn't want to lie to her, but I just didn't have the energy. For anything. Have you talked to Kane at all today? She asked, gripping the slick bow as the ship pitched over another uneasy wave. I sighed, a long and thorough noise, another thing I couldn't bring myself to do. No. What if there's another way? Hadn't he said as much? She was referencing the last time he and I spoke, after the battle, after my mother's death, after my outburst of power and butchery. Kane had said he was willing to let the entire continent fall to Lazarus to save me from my death sentence,
to help me live my life in peace. But I didn't want him to. What kind of peace could I find knowing all those who would suffer at Lazarus's hands because I was holed away somewhere hiding from my fate? I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't be a coward ever again. There's nothing he can help me do but run. Mari pursed her lips. He knows more about this prophecy than anyone. You could be wrong. She frowned, reaching a hand for my shoulder, before thinking better of it and twining it in her fur cloak. I know it's unbelievably hard, and I can't imagine being in your shoes, but can you try to have a little hope? I just need off this boat, I said, staring up into the heavy, rumbling storm clouds above. I know, she sighed. This journey has been miserable. But I wasn't thinking of the rain, or the cold, or the vomiting. Only of getting Lee and Ryder safely to Citrine, and myself as far from Cain as possible. Somewhere I could be alone until I was needed. A sacrificial lamb awaiting slaughter. So I stayed silent as the rain battered my face, searching my heart for an ache at Mari's empathy, for hope, for even a trill of fear at the thoughts of my future. But I found nothing. I missed my mother. I wanted to go home. I wanted to sleep for a long, long time. This is Ruby Charisse. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of A Dawn of Onyx by Kate Golden. This program was directed by Craig Campbell and Beth Hicks. Executive producer, Iris McElroy. Edited by Tie Deaf Studios. Text copyright 2022 by Natalie Sellers. Epilogue copyright 2023 by Natalie Sellers. Production copyright 2023, Penguin Random House, LLC. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you've enjoyed this program.